ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
What is a plant gall, and why does it challenge Darwinian evolution? I'm Casey Luskin with ID, the Future, and today we have on the show with us Dr. Wolf Eckhard-Lonig, a geneticist, now retired, who worked for most of his career at the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research in Germany. Dr. Lonig's name should be familiar to many ID the Future listeners, as we've had him on discussing many fascinating topics over the years. Today, we're having him on to discuss the origin of plant galls, a topic that he knows something about because of his strong background in the biology of plants. So thank you so much, Dr. Lonig, for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you for having me, and I'm happy that you are interviewing me.
Oh, it's great to do this again. It's been a few years since we've done an interview, and I've been looking forward to this. So the first question is sort of the obvious one to get us started off. What is a plant gall? And is this the kind of thing that we might see on a regular basis when we are observing plants?
Yes. The phenomenon of plant galls is so widespread that almost everyone who has been out in the wild a few times has seen some plant gall. However, usually without recognizing or realizing their function and meaning in nature, not to speak of the problems they pose for Darwin and his followers. One can even say that as long as human beings have existed on the earth, they must also have perceived plant galls. Just recently, a lady in her mid-40s wrote me a mail and said that she has noted this phenomenon without understanding and investigating the matter more thoroughly. So, this plant galls, among many other things, there's iron gall ink, which was considered in the Middle Ages up to the 20th century and right into the 20th century, and the Codex Sinaiticus, the Magna Carta, the Declaration of the Independence of the United States of America, but also the theories of Isaac Newton and letters of Charles Darwin were all written with plant galls ink. And even Leonardo da Vinci, Rembrandt, Vincent van Gogh, Johann, the English pronunciation, Sebastian Bach, were written in iron gall, according to Wikipedia. Yes, and you also said, what are plant galls? We are focusing our attention now to plant galls induced by insects, where there are other things, other organism-inducing. For here, we find the most elaborated, intricate, meticulous galls to which Darwin and other authors have mostly referred to. But the definitions have recently become more comprehensive and sometimes even distract from the really complex phenomena. Now, here's a definition of an insect-induced plant gall by Richardson, 2017. As an insect-induced gall, as a highly specialized structure resulting from atypical development of plant tissue induced by a reaction to the presence and activity of an insect. The insect induces a differentiation of tissues with features and functions of an ectopic organ, providing nutrition and protection to the galling insect from natural enemies and environmental stresses. And now the important point, which I like to stress and to emphasize, is that it's a consensus among gall searchers that virtually entirely new organs are formed in the insect galls. And they speak of, just a little quote, in the intimate biochemical interactions, hundreds of homologous novel effector proteins generated by the insects can be involved, triggering the wide range of services galls provide. This was Harrison, 2020. Even producing it, I don't recall or don't enumerate all the authors, just what they have said, and you can see it on my homepage if you want to know exactly which author has defined which or used which words. Producing new organs, novel organs, highly specialized plant organs, unique organs, de novo plant tissue organ, also neoformed plant organs and ectopic organs, and generation of entirely new forms displaying good, constant, and definite character, or true forms as does any independent organic being does. in the overwhelming majority characterized also by strict host specificity. So it's very interesting. New organs, entirely complex, specialized new organs are formed. And now, of course, the next question would be, what is happening in that plant gore?
Well, before we go on to that, Wolf Elkhard, I just want to make sure our listeners are getting sort of the right mental picture of what we're talking about here. A plant gall, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is they're like those lumpy, ball-shaped bump things that you might see on a branch of a tree or a plant. They almost look like a lumpy tumor on a branch of a plant, and they could be the size of like a golf ball or a baseball or even bigger sometimes. And I think we've all seen these when we're looking at plants. Is this basically a correct description, what I just said?
Well, it is an enormous diversity. This description was correct, but there's much more forms which one cannot even imagine if one has not seen them. It's so complex and so astonishing and impressive.
If you want to know what a plant gall looks like, as Dr. Lonick says, there are many diverse forms. And I did see that when I did a Google search. There are lots of different shapes and sizes and even colors and locations of them. So I would say if you want to know what a plant gall is, Google it. You'll get some great visuals and you'll have some average ID the Future listener will recognize them. So let me get to our next question then.
Let's Google it and look at my article. You find additional pictures.
Great. Yes, very much so. We'll post a link to your article about plant galls from the podcast. So tell us, Dr. Lonick, what might live inside of a plant gall? Could you give us some examples of what's inside a plant gall? I know you mentioned insects. And are the insects, are they hurting or harming the plant? What's going on here?
Well, first, a little definition. Usually, the adult female of the gall-making creature selects a plant during the spring or early summer while the plant is still actively growing and inserts her ovipositor, egg-laying organ, into a tender growing part. When she deposits her egg or eggs, she also injects a chemical that causes the gall to begin forming, or even a cocktail of chemicals. And when the egg is put there, hatches, the larva continues to release a chemical soup, a cocktail of chemicals that keep the gall growing to match the size of the larvae. Galls are, this is I don't give all these references, and we would spend half of our time with a reference. You can check them on my homepage. Galls are abnormal growths that occur on leaves, twigs, roots, flowers of many plants. Most galls are caused by irritation or stimulation of plant cells due to feeding or egg laying by insects such as aphids, midges, wasps, or mites, the motum arboreum. So I had another question. What are these insects or the larvae which are developing in the plant galls? Are they these insects hurting or harming the plant? I would like to point out that for more than 330 years now, it has been known that the service provided by the plants for gall formation, quotation, results in their own disfigurement. Malpighi, 1679. Massive infestations can induce stunting, chlorosis, wilting, even death in certain plants. Diameter of stem and total height can be distinctly reduced. We even speak of gall disease, cecidiosis, in the case of heavy infestations, adversely affecting the plant in culture and or in the wild. But usually, most in cases are slight infections, and the plant seems to control and survive the parasitic loads. Yesterday, I saw a heavily infected wild plant. It was really impressive. The entire plant full of these little houses of insects, which then leave that plant gall at the right time, and they can open it and so on. Some galls, particularly those that occur on the stems and perennial plants, can be very serious problem. The galls not only disfigure the plants, but can result in even, as it's produced, death of the plant. The gall is an example of a plant-animal relationship, but the plant is an unwilling and helpless partner. And beautiful or ugly, large or small, the gall is completely made up of plant tissue, but it is the insect and its particular chemicals that control the form and shape of the gall.
So in evolutionary biology, we often see all traits in an organism as somehow benefiting the organism itself. And in fact, in the article that you wrote, and again, we'll post a link to the article in the description of the podcast, you quote Darwin saying, quote, natural selection cannot possibly produce any modification in any one species exclusively for the good of another species. If it could be proved that any part of the structure of any one species had been formed for the exclusive good of another species, it would annihilate my theory, for such could not have been produced through natural selection. So my question for you, Dr. Loenig, is, are plant galls not simply there to benefit the species in which they occur? Are they benefiting the plant? Surely the animals in the galls are doing something for the host in return, or is this not true? So what is going on here?
No, it's not true. It is not true. Definitely not true. To put it bluntly, according to several plant gall researchers, this phenomenon has in fact annihilated his theory because more than 99% don't benefit the species in which they occur. He also, natural selection can produce, as Darwin said, nothing in one species for the exclusive good or injury of another. Though it may well produce parts, organs, excretions highly useful or even indispensable, or again highly injurious to others, but in all cases at the same time useful for the possessor. Point is, they are definitely not useful for its possessor, the plant. So the question is, do they benefit the plant? And the clear answer is, they don't. In short, entirely new organs, complex, refined, sophisticated, high-tech galls, consisting up to 7 differentiated layers with diverse positive functions for the guests, are formed at the exclusive expense of the plant. In the case of the galls, in thousands of plant species, often entirely new organs have been formed for the exclusive good for more than 132,930 other species. The more than 130,000 other species for their exclusive good. These ugly facts have annihilated Darwin's theory as well as the modern versions of it, according to many gall researchers, among them, by the way, of Professor Ilias of the Max Planck Institute here in Germany. The galls are not useful to the possessor, the plants. It is no space for these phenomena in the world of the selfish genes for the plant galls. The plants provide optimal nutrition, modified or buffered microenvironments. They feed and house the larvae of specialized insect species. Or, in the words of Connie Barlow, following the interpretation of Richard Dawkins, the insect genes somehow induce plant tissues to swell in the spot where the egg has been laid. The plant thereby supplies the growing grub not only with food, but also with a safe and comfortable home. So, the plants perform all these services at their own expense, and the costs can be alarmingly high.
So, Wolf Eckhart, why do plant galls pose a challenge to Darwinian evolution?
I would like to quote Otto Braun and Erich Becher. They have also formulated and the ensuing basic questions for all selection theories, old and modern. And they ask, but how are we to understand the appearance of entirely new formations that are completely absent from normal host plants? How did the plants achieve potentials for totally new structures, exclusively serving other beings? Can the principle of selection help us? They answer, no, it fails completely, for altruistic potentials arise. According to Darwin, the plants without galls should have an advantage over those with galls. And so in the course of evolution, the gall-free variants among the plants should have been chosen very soon and everywhere as the fittest ones, because they don't have to pay this heavy load of losing materials which the other plants can use for growing and flowering and developing. And now to these, what Meyer and Dawkins said. Well, they speak of two different selection pressures. Meyer, quoting, on the one hand, selection works on a population of gall insects. and favors those whose gall-inducing chemicals stimulate the production of galls, giving maximum protection to the young larva. Now, this is an important point. This is the answer of Meyer and also of Dawkins. This, obviously, is a matter of life or death for the gall insect. And Dawkins is quoting that part of Meyer in his book about the extended phenotype. So it is a matter of life or death for the gall insect, and thus constitute a very high selection. In contrast to the affected plants, the opposing selection pressure on the plant is in most cases quite small, because having a few galls will depress the viability of the plant host only very slightly. The compromise in this case is all in favor of the gall insect. Well, my first question would be in that case, but what about the often heavily infected plants also happening in the wild?
So, Wolf Alcard, what about someone like Lynn Margulis, who was fond of the symbiosis model of evolution? Could someone like her find some evolutionary explanation for plant galls that has something to do with symbiosis?
Biology Online, what is symbiosis? Symbiosis can be defined as any kind of relationship or interaction between two dissimilar organisms, each of which may receive benefits from their partners that they did not have while living alone. Well, in that case, it's definitely different. It is only the animals, 99.99%, that the plants don't receive benefits from their partners. So it is definitely not a benefit for both the organisms involved here. And another interesting point, textbook author Stern suggested that the aphids and other galling insects, quotation, manipulate latent plant developmental programs to produce modified atavistic plant morphologies rather than create new forms de novo. Well, considering the utmost variability of the morphological forms of the plant galls, yet always in strict combination with the exactly tailored systems of functions focusing on the needs of the insects, my first question would be, which of their assumed ancestors or plants assumed should have ever produced such forms? I don't know that this atavistic plant morphologies, this is really a very doubtful thing. A really conundrum. How is it possible that plants produce such entirely new forms that can induce for the exclusive benefit of another? This is, by the way, Romains, who also said, in a plant gall, we have unequivocal evidence for a structure occurring in one species for exclusive benefit of the other. He tried to, it was only little, it's just of a structure. Well, it's more than 1,000 structures in more than 130,000 plants in the exclusive benefit for, structure occurring in one species for exclusive benefit of another.
So, Dr. Lonick, let's close this up by talking about intelligent design. Obviously, there's information involved in generating these plant galls. Can we make a case that plant galls were designed?
Well, first, I would say that Dembski and Behe and others have said of the method to detect intelligent design, there's no magic, no vitalism, no appeal to occult forces involved in the inferences to intelligent design. And inferring design is widespread, rational, and objectifiable. So, and as inferring design is a perfectly common and well-accepted human activity. To distinguish, by the way, designed events from events due to either law or chance. So what about most plant galls generated by insects? Well, for us, improbability fulfilled, specification fulfilled, purpose fulfilled, co-adaptation, synorganization fulfilled, even between kingdoms, inter-kingdom synorganization, plants and animals. Irreducible complexity most probably fulfilled by many examples. A dormant, usually non-appearing form-building abilities that can be awakened in the plant fulfilled. Plant altruism fulfilled. Insects use complex compositions of proteins for gall induction in coordination or attuned to the potential of gall formation in the affected plants. Well, many research questions are still open, and the listener and reader of the corresponding articles, which I've written with all the details, is invited to decide whether he, she can already draw the conclusion to intelligent design for not all, but for many of the insects-induced plant gall phenomena. Because they are so complex, this is entirely new organs have been formed, complex organs, just to explain these by an endless formation of mutations, which are random, at least for me, is not a satisfying answer for me.
Okay, well, Dr. Lonick, thank you very much for enlightening us about this topic of plant galls and coming on ID the Future.
Yes, thank you very much for inviting me, having me, and we have talked about many points, but there are still many other points which you have not talked, and just to you find in this article.
Yes, I would certainly invite our listeners to read Dr. Lonick's article on why plant galls pose a challenge to Darwinian evolution. We will post a link to it from the podcast. But Dr. Lonick, thanks again for teaching us so much about this fascinating topic. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.